Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, good morning to you. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. Hopefully, if you were in your car listening to this right now, you're not stuck in one of those horrible traffic jams out there. But what you probably are doing, if you're in St. Louis County, is driving on a snow-packed road somewhere, because we've determined that is largely what the road conditions are this morning. Welcome into the show, because I put a picture up earlier of my experience this morning at 4 a.m., and it dramatically differed between St. Louis City, where all the lanes were clear on the highways, to parts of St. Louis County where it was a single lane, and even then you couldn't always see the pavement. I don't know what the difference is. Lots of comments and shares on that post this morning. Feel free to go on there and check it out and share your opinion and your experience so far this morning. It has been it's been an experience, hasn't it, Kim?
Yeah, I was hopeful that the roads would have been better than they really were. And I understand maybe some of the side streets can't be hit yet, but the interstates weren't that great.
Well, that's the thing. For people who didn't drive yesterday, a lot of people are probably just getting out for the first time this morning, and some of them may be shocked. You may have expected a little faster cleanup. I mean, it was a big storm, but some places got the job done, like Illinois, as Andy Banker pointed out on Fox 2 yesterday. Illinois is like a different world. If you're in the Metro East, you're golden when it comes to the highways. But if you're not, then you're probably finding out what some of the problems are out there. So we're going to get to all of that for you coming up here just shortly. And we've also got Scott Lauerman joining us in the next segment. We're going to talk about those offshore drilling bans that the Biden administration decided to just leave on everybody at the last minute as they're headed out the door to try to stymie the drill baby drill promises that have come from Donald Trump in his campaign. And now that he's been certified as the next president of the United States, with the certification of the election happening yesterday, we'll get to all that for you right now. Carl Middleman, let's get to the top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
What started as a movement to be more inclusive has increasingly been used to shut down opinions and shut out people with different ideas, and it's gone too far. So I want to make sure that people can share their beliefs and experiences on our platforms.
Wow, how about that? An epiphany from Mark Zuckerberg. They're suddenly going to allow more free speech on Facebook, on the Book of Faces. I might not get shadow banned as quickly moving forward, because it won't be the Biden administration working with them behind closed doors to suppress conservative speech. Imagine that.
Democrats lost the election. Nobody's arguing that. I mean, that's what the argument was 4 years ago when Donald Trump was filing lawsuits and they were raiding the White House. What we are saying, though, is that prices are going down.
Are they? Are prices going down? I don't know if that's if that's true or not, but some people are claiming it's it's Joe Biden's win. I don't agree.
I just remember after January 6th, you had someone like Mitch McConnell placing the blame on January 6th where it belonged, squarely on Donald Trump's shoulders. Mm-hmm. And then you started seeing people backtrack that.
Wow. Sonny Hostin, the brain surgeon over at The View, she's trying to tell you that this is a big problem. And guess what? It was the worst thing that ever happened in America on January 6th. Said no one.
Conditions appear to be much better on the Illinois side. Fox News Andy Banker continues our live team coverage now from Collinsville.
Yeah, I can't help but to get back to this. It's what's on everybody's mind this morning. I'm sorry if you are listening to my voice and you're not still in your home or watching us on Facebook, then you're probably have driven in this or you are driving in it right now. I drove yesterday. I came to work. Ethan and I made it in. Carl had the day off. Kim worked from home. So I'd say that's a pretty good representation of a lot of folks out there. A lot of people worked from home or had the day off yesterday. Their offices probably closed. I had to drive on the road yesterday, and they were a mess. It took me 45 minutes longer than normal to get to work. Part of that was because I did end up behind a MoDOT road crew headed downtown. But what have they done the last 24 hours? Like, the roads were not markedly better in St. Louis County this morning than they were yesterday morning on my way in. And that's a problem. It is. I don't know. They sent Andy over there to try to figure the whole thing out yesterday. And on because in the Metro East, it's a far different story, apparently. And I'm not 100% sure why that is. Listen.
Progress is stark compared to Missouri. This is Page near 170 this afternoon. Now look at the secondary highways and interstates here. IDOT covers about 5,300 lane miles of highway in 11 counties in the St. Louis region, not as much as the Missouri side. Still, IDOT is ultra aggressive with more than 150 snowplows on the road around the clock. The goal was to have all of those lane miles all or mostly clear and draw down staffing before the brutal cold sets in tonight. That's essentially where things stand right now.
Yeah, so much better over there.
I think what stuck out to me was seeing that there was only one lane open on I-64, and it wasn't even an entire lane. It was part of a lane. You're kind of straddling the line, and you're still going over packed down snow or ice.
Have you water skied, Kim?
Yes.
This is what it reminded me of. So you're behind the boat, you're water skiing, and you're safely within the wake. And then you decide you're going to go outside of the wake. First of all, you have to be able to do that. And then second of all, if the water's choppy at all or there's wake from other boats, that's a little risky because then you have to worry. That's sort of what it was like coming to work this morning. I'm doing 40, 45 miles an hour. I'd get behind somebody on that little piece of paved road that was doing 20. And then I'd have to drift outside of the wake into the snow-covered road and hope that I didn't lose traction in order to get around that individual who was doing 20 in the paved in the one where you could see a little bit of pavement.
That's a good analogy.
Causing major traffic problems,
right,
for everybody, because you don't want to drive on the uncleared portion, but sometimes you have to.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's three lanes of traffic, you can bet two of those lanes this morning in St. Louis County were not clear on most local highways. And that's a problem.
Yeah. St. Charles County, same boat as St. Louis County. Just not great.
Same boat. I like that. That was a
I didn't even
nice
mean
pun.
To do that.
That was good.
It worked out well.
You are really good. I'm just telling
Thank you.
All right. Coming up, Scott Lauerman on the Biden administration's plans to stop all drilling off the coasts of the United States because he thinks he's saving the environment and could care less that you're paying $3.50 a gallon for a diesel. As Carl found out on the way to Florida. We'll be back in just a minute.
Look, I got to say, it is infuriating. I'm 54 years. I've never seen an outgoing president behave with such utter contempt for the American people and the voters and democracy the way Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are doing. They know there was a clear mandate in November. They know that the voters want to change course. And yet Joe Biden is like a bitter old man saying, screw the voters. I'm going to stick you with terrible policies. And he's trying to do everything he can to tie the hands of the incoming administration.
Wow. I don't know that anybody could sum that up any better than Senator Ted Cruz did right there when I read about this offshore drilling ban that the administration announced this week. 13 days left in office, and I guess he thinks he's going to somehow tie the hands of the incoming Trump administration. So we wanted to go to the experts on all of this at the American Petroleum Institute. Scott Lauerman is on the phone with us this morning. He's in media relations and the rapid response team there at API. Scott, welcome in.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. What can you add to what Ted Cruz kind of summarized there? I mean, this is really an attempt to tie the incoming administration's hands, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Senator Kennedy summed it up pretty well. American voters sent a pretty clear message for their support for domestic energy development in the election. And yet the current administration is using its final days in office to cement its record of doing everything possible to restrict American energy. Our offshore waters, oil and natural gas development on our offshore waters are crucial to our nation's energy advantage, accounting for 14% of all of our crude oil production and just over 2% of natural gas production. So really a vast resource base there that this sweeping move is just cutting off.
We heard yesterday we were speaking with someone and she was saying she thinks that because he put this in place less than 30 days before Trump takes office, it allows for him to basically automatically rescind it without many challenges. Are you familiar with anything like that, like a 30-day window that's crucial here?
I think there are a lot of discussions going on right now on how this might be rescinded. I think you're probably referring to what's called a Congressional Review Act. But right now, our main focus is working with the incoming administration and Congress to figure out a way to rescind this, whether it's through executive action from President-elect Trump or through new legislation in Congress.
Well, Scott, what is the truth about, I heard Corinne Jean-Pierre say that the areas that they have redlined here basically are not known to have large fossil fuel reserves to begin with. How could she draw that conclusion?
Yeah, I didn't see the remark myself, but I think a good analogy here is you think back 20 years ago, people were saying the same thing about the Permian Basin. And now look where we are today. It's one of the most prolific oil-producing regions in the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a good point. And, you know, I look at this and We've seen evidence since Donald Trump's election here that world leaders are paying attention and they're traveling to the U.S. and they're already starting to change their policies or approaches based on what they know is coming. Is that true in the oil and gas industry? I mean, are they ready to start investing again? Are they already making moves? Are they still waiting till Donald Trump actually gets sworn into office?
Well, look, American oil and gas is a stabilizing force in world markets. As the U.S. has become the leading producer of both of those resources, we've really acted as the stability provider, even as we've seen all of these tensions, whether it be Russia, Ukraine, or the escalation in violence in the Middle East over the past 6 months. American energy has been there to really keep markets from going up as they traditionally would have, looking at the Libya crisis or some of the other historical events that really sent oil markets up. American oil and natural gas production have helped keep that volatility down. But we need smart policies in this country that encourage domestic production, not demonize and restrict it. So I think American producers are really looking to the incoming administration and Congress for that green light to really harness this abundant resource we have.
Yeah, well, and that can't come soon enough. I mean, talking about LNG and all of the different ways that this administration has really damaged the U.S. in terms of exporting that to other countries. I mean, do you think, and maybe this isn't something that's in your ballpark or not, but I've heard that they may look at trying to restart the Keystone Pipeline.
I can't speak specifically to the Keystone Pipeline, but pipeline infrastructure in general is critical to moving energy resources around this country, especially during a time where we have increased power demand from all these this AI and data centers. Particularly natural gas pipelines are going to be needed to supply all this new power generation that's going to be required over the next decade or so.
Yeah, very true. Where can people go to find out more about what you guys do at API?
Folks can go to www.api.org. We have our landing page there. You'll find a bunch of stuff on the offshore resources that we just talked about, as well as some other interesting topics.
Well, Scott Lauerman, thank you for your time this morning. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on again.
Absolutely. Good to get him on here. And boy, again, I'll say it a bunch between now and the 20th of this month, January 20th. Can't come fast enough when you see what this administration is doing. Listen to what the Louisiana governor said, because obviously this affects his shoreline as well and his economy down there. Go to cut 10, Carl, please.
Anger in our state as to that. It means a lot in regards to our economy and jobs. And, of course, the overall economic impact that that has on the country as a whole. I mean, we have seen 4 years of constant inflation that has basically eroded the middle class, made the poor even poorer. And at a time right now, we're dealing with, extremely low temperatures. I mean, this polar vortex that has affected a great swath of the country. We see energy prices rising, and yet here we have the Democrats on the way out the door just sticking it to the American people one more time and just saying, don't worry, we're going to just increase your energy prices on the way out of the door. So, you know, I will be expressing to you my disappointment on that, but certainly I believe on the 20th when President Trump comes in, we'll be working on it, and our Attorney General is busy getting the lawsuit.
Yeah, very true. Hey, remember Wilton Gregory, the former? He was locally in Belleville, I believe, as the bishop, archbishop there, and he most recently served in Washington D.C. Well, guess what? The Pope is now replacing him with some hard lefty. I guess it's some attempt to make a point with Donald Trump. We're going to talk to Eben Brown from Fox News coming up. So, of course, Monday, yesterday, was the Catholic Feast of Epiphany, and the Vatican used it as an opportunity to make an announcement regarding the new archbishop for Washington, D.C. And it seems like maybe he picked somebody who was like-minded, like the Pope, that is, and unlike the incoming administration. Kind of hard to tell. There's certainly some politics at play here, it would appear. Eben Brown of Fox News Radio has been covering that story. And Eben, welcome in. How are you?
Good morning.
Yeah, you know, Wilton Gregory, the cardinal who's being replaced, spent much of his career, many years here, just outside of St. Louis in Belleville, Illinois. So a lot of St. Louis Catholics were already familiar with Wilton Gregory. Tell us about the new guy.
So this new archbishop for Washington, D.C., is someone who has been a bishop for a while in San Diego. His name is Robert McElroy, and he is a cardinal. Okay. So that's more than just being a regular old bishop or archbishop. He is elevated to the College of Cardinals. He's a prince of the church, as it's said. And he will be taking this role in Washington, D.C., at not the nation's largest Catholic archdiocese. That's New York, although I'm calling you from South Florida, and the people in Miami would like to have a word with them. But perhaps a influential archdiocese, because it's Washington, D.C. And what's interesting here is that Cardinal McElroy is not known for being a traditionalist. He's not known for being someone who has espoused the more, call them strict or traditional or typical Catholic, especially American Catholic stances on things. And has been much more aligned with the politics and proceedings of Pope Francis. For instance, he is not denying communion to LGBT members of the church who are still active, sexually active, and has said that politicians who support abortion rights should also not be denied communion. This is very much in line with Pope Francis and very much against what many of the members of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops have espoused. And so why put such a person into this very prime position in Washington, D.C.? And it could be one thing. One, it could be that the Pope is trying to, put his allies in key positions, just in, as any leader of an organization would, whether, you know, regardless of how you agree or disagree. But this also comes just as President-elect Trump names as a nominee as the U.S. U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, a very prominent Catholic activist who is an open critic of Francis's papacy.
Yes.
And his name is Brian Birch. And so so you can ask the question, is this a response to that? Is this a reply by the pontiff to President Trump, who I think that their interactions have been few and they have often sometimes criticized one another openly.
Well, this guy is also, McElroy has also spoken out against Trump. So it seems like that would be the logical response, is this was kind of like a jab back.
I mean, it certainly can be inferred, yes. I mean, there's no statement from the Vatican with the Pope saying, yes, I'm putting this man here because of this, that, and the other thing.
Sure.
But one can make the inferences, of course, and I think a lot of people are.
Yeah, I wondered, and how much of a role immigration might have played in this, because McElroy's also been pretty vocal in his opposition, and so has the Pope, for that matter, to mass deportations, correct?
Well, they have been, this Pope specifically has been very much against the Trump idea of stronger borders and whatnot, and I think for a couple of reasons. One, I think that there's a general attitude among churches that people, government should be taking care of the needy. And so in many cases, the migrants are viewed as people who are needy. You can agree or disagree, or you can state other evidence that suggests you have people who are coming here crossing borders illegally and have nefarious ideas. And you would be probably right there. We have plenty of evidence of that, of course. We know this now, right?
Yes.
And yet there is also, and I am not a Catholic, I'm an outsider looking in, but there is a lot of thinking that a lot of people who would be coming from South America to the United States might themselves quite often be Catholic.
Right.
And you can ask the question, is the church looking out for its own?
Yeah, it's a good point. And I found that just interesting, that the timing is very interesting. But for all I know, Wilton Gregory had already announced his retirement a long time ago, but the timing seems certainly pointed here.
Yes, Cardinal Gregory he's already, I believe, 2 years past the age of retirement.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was, I guess, time. There's normally I think it's 75. That is the required age for retirement for priests, unless they are the Pope, who serves in a lifetime position, unless they resign the way Benedict did. But normally everyone else is made to retire at 75. And I think Gregory did that, or at least put in the papers, as they say, right?
Yes.
The old cop speak, but he stuck around for a reason or two. And, this is how it's being resolved now.
Evan Brown, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
You bet.
Yep. All right. Good. Yeah. I didn't realize that Wilton Gregory, the archbishop there, the Cardinal Wilton Gregory, I guess is how I should refer to him, was the first black cardinal from the United States appointed by the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that when I went back and looked at it. This should be interesting, because
they were sorry to see him go in Belleville.
Oh, I'm sure they were.
Well, they had issues before that.
Yes, they did. Yes, the
major issues.
Yeah, the sexual abuse story had popped its head up as well, and that's one of the things he was dealing with in D.C. as well. But now he's on his way out the door and into retirement, it looks like. Yeah, that story popped up, and I'm like, wow. So that involves somebody we'd be familiar with locally, and as I've said before, I'm not Catholic. I'm just looking at this on the outside. The current Pope is very progressive in his politics, and that has not sat well with a lot of people who consider themselves conservative Catholics, particularly on the abortion issue.
It shouldn't. It should not sit well with them.
Well, I'm just saying it was part of the campaign this year for a lot of people. And I know that personally, in speaking to some people I know who are Catholic, the homilies at a number of churches locally focused on who are you voting for in this election? Not by name, but on what their policies were. Can you go out and vote for someone who is pro-abortion? And many of their homilies suggested, no, you shouldn't do that. Now, obviously, they're probably in opposition to their pope in saying that, because clearly the guy that's taken over in D.C. does not believe that.
It's like offering communion to the members who support abortion or the LGBTQ. You're not trying to say they're a terrible person, but they're going against the church's, the Bible, what it teaches.
And correct.
You should not be able to, in my opinion, receive communion for that reason.
And sometimes there's a difference there, right, between what the church says and what the Bible says. You can't get around that sometimes, the human influence, for sure. All right, quick break here. We're going to be back in just a minute. I got something you need to hear because of some of the fallout from yesterday with the J6 issues and the comments by the left on how bad J6 was in the history of the United States. We'll get to all that for you coming up.
Example to our Republican colleagues. We are not election deniers. We lost the election, we regret it. But we believe in the strength of our democracy, and that when you lose an election, you roll up your sleeves and try to win the next one. You don't deny that you lost it and encourage people to do bad, bad things.
Chuck Schumer yesterday in D.C. trying to make some point about January 6th and Kamala Harris turning over the reins of power. I have to play this because I have to play it for him to look into a camera and say with a straight face, Democrats are not election deniers. Hold on, Carl, are we, what's happened here? Hold on, here we go.
Is fearful of when it comes to his being president is that finally we will see how illegitimate his victory actually was.
I have an objection.
I object to the 15 votes from the state of North Carolina.
I object because people are horrified.
He's an illegitimate president.
Our election was hijacked. There is no question. Congress has a duty to hashtag protect our democracy and hashtag follow the facts.
John Lewis is completely right. There is a cloud of illegitimacy around the election of Donald Trump. The Russians interfered with his election. James Comey and the FBI interfered with his election. The fake news industry interfered with his election.
Trump knows he's an illegitimate president who got illegitimate foreign help.
Do you believe Trump is a legitimate president?
What I believe is that there's no question that the outcome of this election was affected by the Russian interference.
There absolutely is a cloud of illegitimacy.
So that legitimacy is in question, yes.
So that was a very tainted election, and in that sense, it's illegitimate.
Why do you think the president is going to such great lengths to essentially prove that he beat you?
Because he knows he didn't. He knows he's an illegitimate president.
Stolen emails. Stolen drone. Stolen drone. Stolen election. Welcome to the world of unprecedented Trump.
So do you believe President Trump is an illegitimate president?
Based on what I just said, which I can't retract.
Yeah, in honor of Jimma Carter who's lying in state, apparently in D.C. starting this week, I thought I would play that for you. Bear in mind what you just listened to is about 2.5 minutes of a 24-minute long video edited together of all of the Democrats and the media over the past 5 or 6 years talking about denying elections. 24 minutes long. And yet they want to act like the fact that Kamala Harris had to certify the election results yesterday with her loss was somehow evidence that Democrats don't deny elections. Well, we didn't invade the Capitol on January 6th. No, you didn't. But a group of radical Democrats did set off a bomb in the Capitol building in the 1980s, and they went to prison for it. And Bill Clinton commuted the sentence of the woman who was responsible for it. And she now serves as a board member of BLM or something. I don't know. I mean, these radical leftists like Sonny Hostin and the others who want to harp on January 6th and the fact that it was never an insurrection. There was never any risk of the guy with the horns on his head, the shaman, taking over the United States government. And for them to even suggest that is laughable. And I just get so tired of it. And we'll have to hear it again every year on January 6th. You have to listen to it. It's just nonsense is what it is. And Donald Trump is going to correctly commute a bunch of those sentences when he gets in the nonviolent sentences when he gets in office. Hey, I played a little bit of this earlier. I wanted you to hear before we go this morning. Mark Zuckerberg is going to change the way he suppresses free speech because Donald Trump is about to be the new sheriff in town.
After Trump first got elected in 2016, the legacy media wrote nonstop about how misinformation was a threat to democracy. We tried in good faith to address those concerns without becoming the arbiters of truth.
Did they?
But the fact checkers have just been too politically biased and have destroyed more trust than they've created, especially in the U.S. So over the next couple of months, we're going to phase in a more comprehensive community notes system. Second, we're going to simplify our content policies and get rid of a bunch of restrictions on topics like immigration and gender that are just out of touch with mainstream discourse. What started as a movement to be more inclusive has increasingly been used to shut down opinions and shut out people with different ideas, and it's gone too far.
You think, Mark? Isn't it amazing how the far-reaching impact the election of Donald Trump has had?
It really has. Like, we were driving in this morning, and I heard McDonald's is phasing out some of its DEI stuff. And I don't know if that's because Trump is in office, and maybe he'll crack down on these companies that are still doing that. But mm-hmm. I'd like to think it as maybe a small piece
role?
A small role.
They go from having back-channel communications with the Biden administration on who should be shut down, whose free speech should be shut down, to now lifting most of those filters, unless somebody complains. And even then, it'll go through a more extensive review before they ban somebody. How about that? Amazing. January 20th cannot get here soon enough. I'll say it one more time this morning just for your benefit. Hey, be careful out there. The roads are still a mess in a lot of places. Let's hope it's better by tomorrow when Carl Middleman and I are live in Jefferson City for the opening day of the legislative session. Be sure and tune in. Kim will be here holding down the fort in the studio. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Have a great day.
Get more at 971talk.com.